Hi, everybody. This is Greg, co-founder and director of Defense Lab, and you're listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast.
Listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast, presented by Fortress Combat Arts, Bozeman, Montana.
What is going on, everybody? You're listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast. Hey, John, are you there? You know who we got on the show today?
Who? Tell me.
You don't know? I thought you were there pre-show. That guy. Those guys, none other than Andy Norman himself and Greg himself from Defense Lab. Both of you gentlemen, how are you both gentlemen? Pleasure to have you on.
It's very good to be with you guys. Thank you very much.
It's amazing, amigos.
Wonderful. I'm so glad you guys were able to make it. We've been working on it for a little while. We do appreciate, you know, there's a lot of hurdles to do this stuff, and I wish people would understand just what it takes when people say, oh yeah, we really want to be on your show, and just how much work it actually takes to get somebody on the show, schedule wise and everything else, and the fact that you guys are in on the other side of the world. So thank you for that. Again, we're really excited to have these guys on. They're legends in my book. A lot of the stuff that I've trained. I met Greg a while ago at a Casey seminar. A guy changed my life in terms of my martial arts journey. And he and I have been in contact for quite a bit, just as friends. And this is what made this whole interview possible. And Andy himself, always been a gentleman, and never have a bad thing to say about him or Greg. So again, thank you for being on. So let's hit the right out of the gate, KFM. We all know this question will be directed toward Andy. We all know of the Batman movies and all that other stuff, but it was kind of sudden. And then the split. So could you talk a little bit about that? You know, we don't have to get into too many specifics, but the KFM, and then what gave you the idea to actually become Defense Lab and what you guys wanted to start at that very moment?
In truth, it was just really simple. Me and Huster just had differences of opinions of the direction going forward, like how we wanted to develop it and the message we wanted to put across. So without getting into complexities, in the end, it was quite a simple break and just difference of opinions, really. And Defense Lab has taken, obviously, quite a different route now.
Right on. And Greg, I know you've been working in the entire thing. When I met you, you said something about it was 17 years that you dedicated your life to this. And that was roughly around 2012. So you guys listening can do the math. And you are a co-founder now at Defense Lab, and I could attest to both of these gentlemen and the original six, I forgot the name that you guys called them, the CI6?
Yes,
absolutely. And the amount of work that these six people put in to start a brand new company, literally from scratch, because you literally had to rebrand the entire thing, is very admirable. So Greg, talk a little bit about what's been like for you having to kind of change gears up and actually starting this company from the ground up.
Well, the switch was very, very interesting because, as you know, KFM was a well-established company by then. I don't know, we had something like 20 years there, and he was working a lot of time, and he put a lot of effort there. And then I came in the late years, and it was all established, working fine, and everything good. And then we had to move. So starting from zero, I would say we started from broken. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a well-established brand, when we switch everybody, and I mean all the instructors,
right,
from one night to another, we had to inform them, hey, there is no more KFM going on here. Yeah. So everybody was at us saying, what are we doing now? Who are we? What are we moving? And that was quite a bit of mess. And then we had to rebuild everything pretty fast.
Very
and good. Just work really, really hard and solid for 3 years. I think we didn't even have one holiday or one day off for three years, didn't they?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely 3 years. And we're not joking, guys. We were hitting 7 days a week. Definitely for 2 years without a break, and into the third year, maybe 6 days a week. But we were flat out rebuilding the brand.
Right on. And as a result now, can you talk a little bit about what Defense Lab has become now that you guys have put in the time, reestablished? What can you say that Defense Lab is now, since it obviously has its identity? I'll direct that to you, Andy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question, Freddie. I think the best way to try and approach that is what, you know, what we're trying to achieve. In the past, when, you know, KFM, it was looked at as a style. You know, KFM's a fighting style. And with Defence Lab, our message now is a little bit different. We're trying to get across more, you know, it's a way of thinking and taking on board other things and other people more, as opposed to just trying to identify as one specific thing. So really the message, or the deeper message behind Defence Lab, is, you know, definitely we study this street, obviously, but right. it's about a way of thinking and a way of approaching things and an expression, than just being like, for example, and it's only an example, you know, a boxing or a Wing Chun, it's viewed at as a style. And what we found in this last period now is there's many, many people from, you know, stars like Wing Chun and boxing and Thai boxing, you know, taking on board what we're doing and adapting to it and bringing it into their world as well. So it's an open field. We're trying to touch a lot more people than we did in the past.
Right on. I really can attest to that, because, like I said, you guys are on the other side of the world. And Greg, I don't think there's been a few months where you and I haven't texted and said, hey, how's the family? How's this? How's that? So I can attest to that. Yeah. Being way out here on the other side of the world, it's kind of refreshing on you guys doing your thing, but you still make time for the little people like me. So John, you got a thought?
Yeah, the way of thinking, the thought process, what Defence Lab adds, you know, I can't say that I've been able to track everything that's going on, but I'm seeing bits and pieces here. And what's interesting about that is that those bits and pieces are super significant, because it's like mortar. Those little bits and pieces that I find out of the Defence Lab, or even going back to some of the KFM days, I can utilize and I can integrate some of that stuff, because you specifically mentioned the Wing Chun and the boxing. And what happens there is that there's specific ranges that those styles find themselves in. But it seems like that Defence Lab can do a lot to bring in the transitions between distances and ranges. And that's where I really get the biggest benefit from this is, you know, if we're working boxing and we're moving into a grappling clinch thing, there's a lot of things that can happen in between those two ranges. And on top of that, there's a lot of things that can happen getting out of that range. If I'm moving out of the grappling to a distant striking, there's things I can put in there. And a lot of that Defence Lab fills that in, basically like mortar between bricks.
Right, right. And I love that, Andy. I love that that quote you guys started way in the beginning was the study of violence. Why do you guys study violence, right? So to me, that's where the actual evolution came in. Just like you said, there was more. It wasn't just a style anymore. It's actually conceptually a single-minded entity, like a think tank, if you will, is what you're kind of portraying it, right? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting subject you're just speaking about with, you know, styles, boxing range, and the different things with Wing Chun, you know, kickboxing, whatever. And me and Greg speak about this a lot, and we get asked this question a lot as well. And it's about the attributes. It's the attribute that you take from a specific discipline, and then it's the way you apply that to, like, the whole, again, conceptual thing, the whole mentality towards what we're trying to achieve. And obviously in self-defense, you know, self-defense is a minefield out there, because there's so many people speaking as if everybody else is stupid, really, sort of like they're the first person to discover that people, you know, going to pull a weapon out and hit you with it, or, you know, run and charge at you. And, you know, obviously, I'm going to try and do this without waffling. But if we go back to the old Viking days, like the proper warrior days, when they would jump in a wooden boat, row across the North Sea, jump off at the other side, march for days, run onto a battlefield for, probably 6 months at a time, and chop each other's arms and legs off, and then march all the way back, jump in a wooden boat, row across the North Sea again, and arrive back in Norway. That was a warrior. That was a true warrior. We go down to a club and we train, and if you have a street fight, obviously it's not good, because things like knives do come out and can obviously finish somebody's lives. But you know, there's too many people talking like everybody's stupid. And, you know, there's not all the guys out there. There's some great guys out there. So, you know, going back to that thing with the ranges and different things, it's, you know, if you take the attribute from boxing and put street mentality to it, take the attribute from, you know, judo. A lot of people look at judo and go, yeah, but it's just, you know, it's just a sport, isn't it? Well, it is, until a judo guy grabs you in the doorway And within, you know, a matter of a millisecond, you know, you're face down in the concrete. And then all of a sudden that judo guy is not just a sport guy anymore. Why? He's not stupid either. He stood in the street with somebody spitting in his face or swearing at him. And if, you know, if you put your hands on him, it will be the biggest mistake you've ever done. And albeit people in the self-defense arena talk about, yeah, but it's only the sport and we do the real thing. And
it's
the attributes that these elements give. And all we do then is try and take all these incredible attributes from wrestling, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and all the incredible arts, because it's not the fact that it's a sport, it's the attribute. And then just put it into the street mentality and then try and achieve an end goal. For example, we talk about the mass attack. You know, what do you really do when two people do start ragging and kicking you? And what attributes can you take from other places that fit into exactly that? Plus, obviously, the teaching ground is itself the street, the pub, the club, and the disco in the past. We're a little bit older now, so we don't, you know, we don't do silly things anymore.
We're trying not to.
But in the past, when we try not to, but obviously when we were younger, days were different as well back then. I mean, people didn't use knives so much. There was not so many, you know, cameras around and things. And there was a little bit of, you know, almost chivalry still there. You would have an issue with somebody and you would have a fight and, you know, and everybody would walk away from it. And sadly, them days have gone now. You know, people, they'll jump in and everybody joins in. And then obviously the worst scenario is, you know, weapons and things come out, which just changes the whole thing completely. Yeah.
But as you put, I love the go ahead, John.
I've seen that when just bouncing the past couple of years, you get these people. And I mean, even kids that are like hipsters and people that you wouldn't think are going to be the type of people to be froggy and get into fights, they're getting into stuff. And you go outside and you see things going down, and it's not just two people going at each other. It's like one person hits the ground, somebody knocks over somebody's girlfriend, and people start just stomping on everybody. That's what you see anymore. Just, it's like a boot party.
Right. It's really, really sad. Because, like I said, that, you know, that the old days of the chivalry of having a genuine problem with somebody and then going out and sorting it. I mean, in Europe, I'm not, you know, maybe not so much in America, but in Europe, there's still a culture for, you know, gypsy and gypsy fighting. But even they're viewed at, especially in Europe, as like kind of a bit crazy, and it's like, oh, you know, gypsy fighters and things. But what they do is they have a code of conduct. So even when they're fighting, they'll have a bit like a referee. And if something gets a little bit out of hand, or people start, you know, thumbing people in the eyes or doing stupid things, you know, it gets, you know, they'll step in and stop it. And those people are looked at as crazy. It's like, oh my God, gypsy fighters. It's like, they're crazy. They're so dangerous.
Right.
You go, they have a code of conduct. And sadly, you know, the pubs, clubs and discos. And like you said, John, if you're doing the doors, I mean, you get to see these, you know, stupid people. And, you know, quite simply, they're playing with their life. I mean, they have no idea what they're doing, who they're speaking to, the consequences of it. The next thing, you know, they're on the floor and there's five people jumping on their heads. Maybe a weapon gets pulled out and you go, and in truth, if you just go back, you know, 1 minute in time, you go, about what?
Right.
All about what? And either somebody's like, you know, they lose a life or seriously injured. And in truth, all for nothing.
Right. Absolutely.
All for nothing.
Yeah. We're going to take the break right now, but Greg, I got a question for you. So seeing this grown up as a child, I mean, you started this at a very, very young age. So I want to ask you what your take on is the attribute and mentality that Annie just spoke, because did you ever experience anything growing up as a kid? If you could kind of lay that out for your personal experience, and because you've dedicated a lot of time into this, and I think that's pretty freaking awesome. So, you know, kind of throw that at you for a sec.
Yeah, when I started training, I was looking for something that was functional for the streets, because it was the age when kickboxing and a couple of martial arts started arriving to Spain. As you know, they arrived here quite late as to the other different places. So they started here. So all the little gangs or groups of my age, they were training on kickboxing, full contact and all this. And I didn't know anything. So I went and searched for what's the best thing that I can learn just to win everybody if I have ever have a fight, because I grew up in a very little town as well. And there were loads of fights. And like Andy said before, they still had a little bit of ethics there. It's like everybody would make a circle, you would fight, and if you win or you lose, you go home. But now it's changed as well.
Right, absolutely.
But that's what made me start and look for this. And the attributes I got is this reality from the street, which is what I have always been looking for. And then training all the sports, all martial arts, and as many as I could, just to get their specific attributes like speed, power, coordination, things like that.
Right on, right on. The function over the fiction, everybody. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. You've been listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast.
The Function versus Fiction podcast welcomes our very special guests, Andy Norman and Greg, co-founders of Defense Lab. Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, like, and subscribe. July is the month for Defense Lab Summer Camp 2019. July 26th through the 29th in beautiful Puerto de Sagunto, Spain. Keep an eye on @DefenseLab on Instagram and Facebook for more. To find out more about Defense Lab or locate a lab near you, visit www.defenselab.com. The Function versus Fiction podcast thanks you for tuning in. Don't forget, audio version available at stitcher.functionversusfiction.com. Video at www.functionversusfiction.com. Be sure to like and subscribe. Back to the show!
And we are back on the Function versus Fiction podcast with Defense Lab, Andy Norman, Defense Lab, Greg, two really cool down-to-earth gentlemen just talking martial arts. And before we hit the, we took the break, we were talking a little bit about the evolution of fighting, society as it were, where we're still, even there was honor among thieves and people just riff-raff fighting each other right there. So John, you mentioned that during the break, so go ahead and hit me with that, what you were just saying.
Yeah, it's just a shocker to, I mean, you know, we've got this world that we live in where we're inundated with social media. So you can really see like within minutes what's happening in another part of the globe. But something's happening besides just the ability to communicate, the ability to see and transmit ideas quicker, faster to other parts of the world, is there's an attitude and there's something morphing and changing and evolving in this global community.
Right.
And it's definitely not a good thing.
Absolutely
it actually
not.
It challenges us with who we are and what we teach and who we want to be, because we're seeing just people turning into animals. You know, you see all this stuff with zombie apocalypse and, you know, as far as being movies and, you know, what's going to happen if something ever turns into something where there's like the societal breakdown. But I think we're like already kind of in the fringes and we're seeing the societal breakdown in the individuals that are actually committing these heinous acts.
Right, right. I would, very interesting point. So, Andy, go ahead and if you got a second.
Yeah, it is a super interesting point, John, and definitely something now that social media, you can see so many videos on, you know, Instagram and Facebook and obviously on YouTube. And the cultural thing around the world is without question changed, and sadly, you know, changed for the worse. Some of the things that you're actually, you know, we actually can be exposed to just on a simple social media. I mean, basically, it's horrific. I think one of the other things it highlights as well, and this is sort of a question for all of us, really.
Sure.
Is there's still actually quite a lot until they get pulled off the social media of, like, you know, knife attacks, which obviously is, you know, one of the most horrendous things, and people sometimes, I still think, greatly undervalue a knife and the way that you can deal with a knife. And I guess kind of like putting it out there, but throwing a question even to you guys, I mean, of all the videos I've seen, and it's a lot, and I've also got access to obviously like lots of behind the scene footage from police, CCTV and prisons. I have never seen one single person ever in a knife attack video on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, wherever, that's actually lost. The knife 100% wins. I'm sure somewhere along the line, somebody's taken a knife off somebody. I'm sure somebody out there listening right now will say, I kicked a knife out of somebody's hand and blah, blah. And then this is a little thing back towards you again, John. Maybe when you stood on the door and there's somebody in front of you and they're obviously drunk, they're a little bit stupid, and they maybe pull a knife out and they're more frightened to use it than they actually, the reason they pulled it out, and they're waving it around in front of you in full view, and then obviously they're drunk. You know, it can be kicked and be classed as a disarm. But somebody with a knife with intention, one, as we all know, you're probably not going to see it. Secondly, they have full intention. And then the third thing that I think is greatly underestimated in the world of self-defense, it's so simple, But when I listen to so many people talk around the world or talk and show about the work, is the one thing they miss is self-defense represents what? You're not ready. You're just simply not ready.
You got caught.
You stood in a bar. Yeah, you just stood in a bar. You're talking to somebody. I mean, you know, John, if you work indoors, you observe people. I mean, people have stood at bars. They're having a great time. They're just talking. And, you know, the next thing, somebody, is it a tap on the shoulder or is it a provocation? And the next thing, you know, you've been smashed in the face. Many times you don't even know why. And the biggest challenge there is what? Oh, yeah, you weren't ready. And now you've got to turn something around that you have no idea what's just happened. Mm-hmm. You're starting from maybe 20% down because you've been punched that hard in the side of the face. You're seeing stars. You don't know where the hell you are. You don't know who anybody is. You don't know what the hell's going on. Your brain's having this horrendous trauma, just trying to make sense of absolutely anything. And then obviously the other two or three friends start kicking in as well. So I think one of the greatest things with self-defense that people miss is you're not ready. And you've not been sat in the changing rooms for 30 minutes warming up. You've not been even doing your knife drills for 30 minutes warming up. You're just totally out there having a drink, having a great time. And the next thing, you're fighting for your life.
Right.
And many times, just for no reason at all, you just looked at somebody, you looked at some, you know, you're looking at my girlfriend's ass. It's like, no, I wasn't. It's like, blah, blah. And, you know, literally the next thing, you know, you're fighting for your life, literally. And that's tough. It don't matter how tough you think you are. You know, it's scary, and you know, you play with your life when you get yourself into these kind of situations. We always say to the people, you know, about self-defense nowadays, you know, Andy, what, you know, what and how and why and what would you do and this. And I just go, look, guys, in truth, your street defense training is like you know, insurance. It's like a medical insurance. You don't really want to use it, and you might be paying a lot of money for it too.
Right, right.
God, are you glad you got private medical? You know, for us personally, self-defense training is looks like you go to the academy, and we call it dancing with the devil. Go and train in there. Go and put your gum shield in, put your groin guards on. And if you want to pressure test it and dance with the devil in the academy, then shake hands and go and have a beer. Don't do it in the street. It's a different place. It's a different world. And you really are playing with your life because you have no idea
right.
who anybody is, what they've done, what they're capable of doing. And as we all know, even the after effects of like, okay, you give me a thumping tonight, but I am going to come back next week with my friends. And depending, obviously, which country in the world you live, we're coming back with machetes and guns. And if not, we're just going to come back with 10 guys and beat the living daylights out of you anyway. It's just don't, you know.
Right, no.
Go training.
Yeah.
Study, yeah. You know, study the reality. Study this now. If you want to learn, you know, like people always say, you know, how did you learn to fight at a bar? And they stood at a bar and trained and obviously personal experiences, getting in and out of cars. But you don't have to go and have a real fight with somebody in a car. Just train. Just sit in a car and get somebody to put my, you know, hand through a window, open the door and train. If you want to learn how to fight at a table, just sit at a table and train. There's no. When we first started teaching, you know, when we first started teaching things like, you know, sat at a table and people see, it's quite old now on YouTube, but, you know, sat at tables and people grabbing your shoulder and we're like, we do one of those simple shapes and smack them in the face. And people are like, oh my God, that's so, like, whoa. And it's like, have you never thought of just like somebody grabbing hold of you when you sat down? It's not that much of a revelation, guys. It's just what really is.
People,
all these years on.
Everybody's so programmed to see training and self-defense from two martial arts squared off in front of each other. That's people are programmed.
Fighting for the sake of perpetuating a fight.
The way they learn.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I got a couple quick stories and then Greg, I'm going to direct it toward you right after this. But the interesting, Andy, you bring up the car thing is because when I first met John in 2014 and then I jumped out to Montana in 2015, he decided he wanted to, we had a 2-hour drive out east. He's laughing already. Andy, you guys will love this. So he gets upset. He did get upset. And he's like, no, I'm going to get shotgun. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I'm sitting with one of his star students at the time. And I'm like, okay, sit in the back.
I can't believe you're doing this to me.
I am.
Can't believe you're doing this. All right.
Because we ended up driving for 2 hours. And I gave his student a 2-hour lesson on how to fight in the back of a car the entire way. And John is looking behind. He's like, oh, what are you guys doing? Hold on. He got so upset that he shoved the guy out of the car on the way back and said, no, I'm sitting in the back now. So it turned into, have you ever fought in the back of a car? Yeah, we did. We did for 2 hours. I'm like, you can do this. Okay, I'm going to start throwing this. And the other quick story I wanted to point out, Andy, when you mentioned about not being ready, going to have a beer with your friends and whatnot. Our producer, Craig, I remember way back when I've been bringing that one up. He's nodding his head. He was actually just smoking a cigarette. He was out in Boston doing some work. He's sitting out in the lobby, and he got jumped for no damn reason by four gents. And Craig hasn't really trained much in his life. He can defend himself, but the fact was he knew, he's like, I'm not going to run. I'm going to stand my ground because I need to be in front of cameras because I don't know where in the F I'm going to go and end up in an alley with a boot party. So absolutely ridiculous the way the kind of society is kind of molded in that way. Anyway, Greg, you got a thought?
Yeah, exactly. I agree completely with everything because, as we say, we fight very much with bare hands here in Europe, especially in Spain. Now the knife culture is growing, but I have experienced quite a lot of times this, and it's really, really sad to see we as humans are evolving this way, because I don't think this is gonna this is not gonna step back in time. This is just gonna get worse and worse and worse. And the worst thing that we got there is our younger generations. That's what they're growing up with, so they think it's normal.
Right,
so
right.
It's quite sad. But in saying that, that's why we are really proud of doing what we do as a job. It's just giving people the tools to think correctly, to be prepared, and like Andy said before, just private medical insurance that if you ever need it, is there for you to use.
I like the way that's put. So we're continuing with the concept, kind of segueing a little bit for the discussion of the evolution. Can you talk a little bit about some of the flavors you guys have been offering, particularly maybe with Master Clark, or discuss the evolution of Krav while we're kind of talking about that, changing the mindset and the landscape of certain types of systems that were created a certain way, but kind of opening the mind a little bit. I'll direct that to you, Andy.
Yeah, the project we've got going with Master Clark initiated itself probably around 14 years ago when we met at one of the super shows, and Master Clark and myself, we just got on really well, and he invited us back up to stay with him in Jacksonville, which we did. And kind of the discussion started from there, and it got into Krav Maga, because Master Clark was really, really into, again, the self-defense and the reality side of the training, because obviously if the people know of him, know that, you know, he's been a massive part of the ATA, which is, you know, Taekwondo Association.
Yeah.
But him personally has been, you know, massively into the reality side of it. So we got talking about the Krav Maga, and obviously the message and the image that Krav Maga got out onto the world circuit many years ago was a very good one, because it was about looking after yourself on the streets, and, you know, and it being a street self-defense methodology.
Yeah, simple to the point. Yeah.
But as many will know, if you've gone through the authentic kind of curriculums, it's not actually that long. The curriculum is, in truth, a little bit of like an old, you know, military boot camp thing.
Right.
And it was designed to be exactly what it was. But obviously the limitless possibilities of the street and the different scenarios, changes the ballpark again. You go, well, you know, what if? Because obviously being on the circuit so many years, I mean, me and Greg never get stopped at being asked, you know, a trillion questions. Hey, Greg, what would you do if? Hey, Andy, if somebody did this, what would you do? You know, a million questions. You got how many combinations to a street scenario? Limitless. So what Master Clark said to us, he said, well, can we evolve the Krav Maga? Can we make it more up to date with what's, you know, the questions people are asking? And he was really, really intrigued the first time we started showing him, like, lots of the scenario things, and, you know, pubs, clubs, bars, taxi ranks, all the kind of places that a lot of things kick off. He was fascinated with it. So what we did, rather than trying to, like, you know, change Krav Maga or reinvent something, he's like, no, the Krav Maga is a fantastic foundation, a great baseline. And we started to build on top of it, literally like building a skyscraper. If the foundation's good, as we all know, and we all listen to, you know, philosophy, you can build and build and build on top of it. So that's pretty much what we did and have done. And all these years later, we've built an online portal with him.
Right, right.
But it's about, I don't know, it's just trying to keep things up to date for people. When the thing that fascinated people with KFM in the early days was this, you know, this mass attack and multiple attack, and obviously these shapes that, you know, 20 years on, people go, oh yeah, I've seen that, I know that, I do that, we do this, we've done that. But 20 years ago, it really wasn't, you know what I mean? Because, you know, we were there, and we were the anarchic ones that went out onto the circuit when people were saying to me, you know, what's that? That's, you know, excuse my French, but bullshit, you know, that's, you know, blah, blah. 20 years later, you know, most of the world is like pinched it and having a good time with it. Why? After pressure testing a little bit and getting smashed around the face, and they start to go, yeah, it's kind of like if people are punching you in the face in the pub, you're probably going to bring your hands up and start trying to protect your knockout points, aren't you?
Right.
You know, and we have a joke. We put a person in the middle of four people. So that's eight fists. And we say, right, just punch them in the head as hard as you can. And you guys are not allowed to defend your head. And everybody laughs and goes, oh, that's stupid. And you go, well, you think that defending your head is a technique. It's not a technique. It's a cultivation of human instinct. Mm-hmm. You've only got to look. I mean, I'm sure you will have seen this as well, John. People, if they do get whacked and they get knocked down and they're getting kicked, I mean, what do? They curl into a fetal position, which is basically their hands on their head and their elbows trying to touch the knees. And it's basically, you know, a fetal position. This is instinct. When people are getting smacked and punched in the face, this is instinct. And people used to, you know, say, that technique will never work. It's like, guys, you're missing the point. It's right. Not a technique. Right. It's, you know, a defense in action process. It's a defense, but it becomes the weapon. And that's the bit that I think caught the world's attention. It definitely what caught the attention with Paul Jennings for Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. When I went in to do an audition for that, and they asked me to show, you know, work from JKD, from Carly, from Salap. So you'll see on one of the making of videos, I'm doing little bits of...
Not necessarily
KFM. And I was a bit, if I'm honest, a little bit disappointed because they only put on that initial bit of the video, the bits that they'd asked me to do from the systems that I'd trained. Mm-hmm. But the part that clinched the film was doing the KFM, was doing that. I was shaping stuff and the street fighting side of things. And that's when Paul Jennings went, he said, what's that? I said, this is what I do. And he just said to one of the guys, he went, go get a camera. So they ran off and got a camera really quickly, came back, videoed it, asked me to show some more things of like, you know, with the shaping and the street things, and sent it straight off to LA and Chris Nolan. And within 1 week, I was employed on Batman Begins as the fight consultant.
How about that? I've never heard this story before, and that's because we only heard it from the news and whatnot. So this, Andy, thank you very much. So we're going to wrap this up. But before we wrap up this episode, we're going to bring Andy and Greg back on the following episode. So be sure to catch us for that. But I kind of want to Greg, we're going to do this for you. We're going to run you through the gauntlet on this one. We'll do Andy on the tail end of the next episode. So okay. Andy, make sure you mute yourself here. Greg, we're going to send this off on a little bit of a light note. Again, we'll do this for Andy on the tail end of the next episode. We're going to do 20 questions in 60 seconds with Greg from Defense Lab. So with Ooh. That, yeah, right, right. It's a special treat for everybody. I got the questions up. I'm going to rattle them off. Greg, you got 60 seconds. Are you ready, sir?
I was born ready, amigo.
Right on, right on. So here we go. I'm going to set the timer. Here we go. Okay. Year you were born?
81.
Favorite type of food?
Bread.
Favorite movie or type of movie?
300.
Favorite color?
Red.
Do you play any musical instruments or can you?
Not now.
Not now. Okay. Any hidden useless talents you possess?
Yeah, I can free dive, 4 meters under the water.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay, who'd win in a fight, ninja or a pirate?
Pirate all day long.
Dog or cat?
Bull terriers.
If you could fight any historical battle, what battle would it be?
Normandy.
Nice. Favorite type of weapon?
Pen.
Cake or pie?
Fruit.
Favorite beer or mixed drink?
Maestra, the best beer in the world.
Right on. And we're over out of time, but I'll ask you one more. Karaoke, yes or no?
No.
No. Right on, everybody. You've been listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast. Be sure to catch our next episode, part two, with Andy and Greg from Defense Lab. Thanks again. We'll catch you guys on the next one. Peace.
You just heard the Function versus Fiction podcast, presented by Fortress Combat Arts. Be sure to visit us at fortresscombat.com and check us out on Facebook. We'll catch you on the next one. The opinions expressed on this show are that of the hosts and the hosts only. We hope no egos were harmed in the process. Any mention of a brand, system, or label is not necessarily an endorsement by the hosts.
That's all I got.